This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, it's been a while since I've seen you wearing black leather like that, and is that eyeshadow you have on?
Well, Chris, this is my Mirror Universe outfit. I just got back, and you know, you don't want to not fit in over there, because I mean, if you go over there kind of looking like I normally do with like a plaid button down shirt and a pair of jeans, I mean, you stand out like a sore thumb. So I just wasn't able to change before we recorded. I you know, most people don't normally see me like this, but you know.
Well, that explains the spiky hair also. But what's that in your hand? Is that Grand Nagus Zek's cane?
I just found this lying on the floor over at Terok Nor, and I figured somebody might want it. Maybe it would be worth something on our Earth, so.
That's good you brought it back. So, today we are going to talk about Ferengi, but hang in there with us, everyone, if you're not a fan of the Ferengi, because this time our discussion is alternate. We're going to be wrapping up our Mirror Universe series on DS9 with the Emperor's New Cloak, and Matthew, really the Ferengi are at the center of this episode, and that's my first question for you. It's Ferengi for the win, closing out the Mirror Universe on DS9. I mean, how do you feel about them deciding to go to the Ferengi, of all people, for the final trip to the Mirror Universe?
You know, I was thinking through this. Okay, how does this play out? It's going to be the final time we're there at the Mirror Universe, and I thought to myself, I think this actually makes a lot of sense, you know, because who else but the Ferengi and Zek specifically would be kind of dumb enough to think that they were going to be able to find more profit for the Ferengi Alliance, but in the alternate universe, especially when Zek really understands very little about the alternate universe in the first place. But he wants to line his pockets with more Latinum. So how does he even know that they use Latinum over there too? Which is a question I had. But besides all that, I just felt like, okay, this does feel like, if you're thinking through how do we get to the Mirror Universe again, this is a good entry point for it. The other thing that I was thinking, though, too, is that you want to go to the Mirror Universe in this last season of Deep Space Nine. One, you probably need some humor in a very dense, emotionally charged season. But two, I think you do kind of want to wrap up the Mirror Universe stories that you've been telling and maybe set it on a course to kind of feel like it's finished in some ways. And I think the Ferengi, strangely enough, give you an opportunity to go there and to be able to inadvertently bring this Mirror Universe saga to a close.
So you're saying you don't want to do like Enterprise and set up a Mirror Universe and just leave it hanging forever and ever?
Well, I think what they did was smart is they gave you the opportunity, if you ever wanted to pick up the Mirror Universe again, you could, but they did a lot of what, you know, the original series did at the end of its episode. It created a big change and then gave you the opportunity to jump off from that wherever you wanted to pick it up. And so, yeah. You know, it's, to me, it's smart, but it also, Deep Space Nine wrapping up here in that season, bringing closure to the Mirror Universe in a way that left fans feeling like they had been on a journey that was worthwhile then throughout these seven seasons to visit it again, I just thought it was smart.
Yeah, what happens in each episode carries forward to the next time that we visit, which was roughly once a season. Now, my comment about Enterprise is somewhat of a joke, because I do think that if that series had continued for seven seasons, they would have gone back to the Mirror Universe and we would have gotten more. And I probably would like those episodes better in A Mirror Darkly if that had happened, you know, if they had continued. But in this case, you're talking about Zek. And I also mentioned recently in our other discussions of the Mirror Universe that I sometimes feel as DS9 moves through its Mirror Universe stories, when we get to this one, things become a bit farcical. Like, it's just like maybe they've run out of focused ideas. And then, you know, we have Worf on and Garak, and we've got all the stuff going on with Ezri. I didn't feel that way as much in rewatching it. So it's something that just kind of floats in my head and maybe becomes clearer each time I watch the episode. In terms of Zek, that might be one reason that I have that feeling, because I do see him as sort of the extreme version of Ferengi humor when he's used on the show. But if you think back to season two, he wanted Quark to find new business opportunities for the Ferengi Alliance in the Gamma Quadrant. And here, we take it to the extreme, not just another quadrant of the galaxy, but a completely other universe. And that's kind of, it's clever and it's funny, and it makes sense for Zek, and it makes sense for the Ferengi. And in contrast to what I've said before about thinking that maybe they've run out of ideas by the time they get to the seventh season and go to the Mirror Universe, maybe they did have this one last great and fine idea to pull out, which was an unexpected one, and focusing a story on the Ferengi.
I was actually thinking that same thing, that the fact that Quark was sent to the Gamma Quadrant to look for new places for profit revenue for the Alliance. And so it in some ways kind of made sense that Zek would think to himself in his old age, you know, hey, I should go to the Mirror Universe. That would be a right. Great place for profit. You know, like it in many ways, it does completely align with his thought process. And, you know, the fact that, yes, he is quite a bit older at this point, and we know he's not necessarily all there all the time, this completely makes sense that this would happen. And, you know, on top of that, the Ferengi going to the Mirror Universe gives us the opportunity to kind of explore one last time the character of Quark in a way where we are able to see how he's grown as a character.
Yeah.
And specifically the conversation that he has with Ezri as they're stuck in jail and they're just waiting around to see, you know, what'll happen. She's like, why are you here? You know what? And he's like, well, because the Negus was caught. And when the Negus is in trouble, you do something. And he's become altruistic. He doesn't even know why, and he doesn't know how to explain it, but he has this sense of loyalty and need to do something out of almost a reverence for the Negus and for the Ferengi culture in a way that he would never have done before. But now there's just something in him that, you know, I think some Federation values have rubbed off on him after all of this time. And I don't know, maybe he's been sipping the root beer.
I was going to say, that's why when he walks by, it smells a little bit like root beer. But no, it's true. And but it's more than just wanting to help the Negus because he's the leader of the Ferengi Alliance and Quark loves being a Ferengi. He wants to help all of his friends. You know, anyone on the station who needed help, Quark is going to help them. And he does it, as you say, not because of a reason that he can clearly explain to people all the time, but it just feels to him like the right thing to do.
Right.
And that's not the Quark that we meet at the beginning of the series or the Quark that we follow through much of the first part of the series. But as things go on, certainly as we get through that occupation arc and further through the war, he really does become that person.
I think you're absolutely right. You know, it's not just about the Negus. There is a whole part of the reality of who Quark is and how he's changed that has impacted every part of his life. And, you know, we saw that in the massive arcs in season 6. We see that here in the arcs we'll get in season 7. It's just confirmation the way that a character like Quark, who, yes, he, you know, he is part of the main cast, but he's also kind of slightly more of a side character.
Yeah, a little bit.
And yet he has such a very clear movement from season 1 to season 7, and there's a big difference to who that character is there and what he believes is important. So I think that's there's something really strong about that. And yeah, I think, you know, most of us kind of make fun of the Ferengi episodes and stuff, but I think this one, by them going to the alternate universe, they were able to do a lot of crazy things, but I think the best thing that we do here is what we do for the character of Quark. And so in the end, mm-hmm. we do get the Ferengi for the win because, kind of mentioned it a little bit earlier, but they literally, in their crazy, wacky antics, put an end to the Alliance.
Well, Quark himself, as we've talked about many times, did many great things for the Ferengi as a race, as they're portrayed in DS9. DS9 took the Ferengi from what they were at the beginning of the Next Generation when they were supposed to be the replacement for the Klingons, and they're just, you know, these kind of like crazy aliens jumping around on the planet.
Fur and whip guys.
Yeah, right. And all through the Next Generation, the Ferengi feel pretty much like a one-note race, you know. Like all Ferengi are very similar to each other because what we're seeing is how the Ferengi as a whole view the Federation, as opposed to really digging into individual Ferengi being different people and having different characteristics. And not all Ferengi see everything the same. And this episode really highlights to me how DS9 did that, not only with Quark, but with Rom. Because the two of them together in this episode, there's such a contrast between their personalities. And you've got, you know, they're both very smart, even though on the surface, Rom sometimes comes off as being goofy. We know he's very smart, but Quark is more devious and serious, and Rom is more kind of a humorous, goofy, as I said, and more thoughtful. And the two of them together, as they're moving the cloaking device. And I love the fact that they cloaked the cloaking device and they're just carrying this thing through the corridors. And the whole scene when Martok and Sisko are walking by and they're pretending like nothing's going on. They've got this cloaked cloaking device there. So they're staring at the wall and they make up the story about Rom wanting to paint his room this color. That whole exchange, it's just played so well by all four of the actors. But the way that Quark and Rom behave there, it's so natural the way Armin and Max are together in that scene. You can just tell how they've grown into these characters and also how individual they are compared with what people typically think of when they think of the Ferengi.
Well, the thing that I really love about that is it is Rom who is responsible for bringing down the Alliance because of his devious actions of as he's putting the cloaking device in to the Regent ship, he has created it so that it will cause the cascade effect of them losing all power. and being able to control the ship. And so, I mean, and that's something that you only saw with the ROM that you got in like season 5, season 6.
Right.
That's a ROM who really had changed and grown. And, you know, he was the one who came up with a devious idea for self-replicating cloaked minds. He really has proven himself. And yes, there, I would say that ROM is a little bit over the top in this episode with the humor aspect of like going back and forth about, you know, it's alternate, it's not alternate, you know, but in the end, again, this character that was kind of a throwaway character and could have been just a throwaway character has literally altered the course of an entire universe.
Yeah. Well, I like actually the scene you're talking about. I can agree that, yeah, maybe he's a little bit over the top. But I also think in that moment that he's the audience a lot of the time. It's this debate that we have about what should the mirror universe be? And Rom is having the debate with himself about should it be black and white? Should it be good and evil? Should everything be the opposite? Should some things be different and some things be the same? I think that conveying that message through one of the characters maybe was best done through Rom, because Rom is the guy who's going to like get caught up in trying to figure it out and just talk to himself. I can't see Quark doing that. I can't see Bashir or O'Brien or Kira or Sisko or anyone else doing that. I feel like it has to be Rom. But I also feel like when you look at fan debate, it is one of those things that felt like it needed to be addressed in some way, like acknowledgement by the franchise itself that, hey, yeah, you know, this can sometimes be confusing.
Yeah, you know, I think that the way that they do that is goofy, but it is kind of fun that they wink at all of us on screen. And I think one of the things that DS9 did by visiting the alternate universe was to make things more nuanced, which is really fun. That it's not just that everybody is evil in the mirror universe, but there right. are variations, you know, and the fact that, yes, O'Brien and Smiley aren't that far apart. Smiley is definitely a little bit more hard-edged, probably a little more irritable, and all of those kind of things. But
because
in the
end, the circumstances right. that he's living in, yeah.
No, absolutely. And so the fact, though, that he also is very similar in what he believes and what he stands for and all those things, yeah, I think is fun. And again, to create that nuance is nice, because then you can have any character kind of go any way whenever you want to write a story. And it doesn't just have to be, oh, if we meet their alternate, they're going to be an evil.
Right.
You know, and yeah. so that it actually makes things more fun and unexpected than when you get to the alternate universe and you meet the character who's the alternate, and you're not quite sure, are they going to be evil? Are they going to be in between? Are they going to be kind of more like the same? What are they going to be? That's much more fun to me.
Well, and Rom sums it up with, it's not alternate. That's what the conclusion he comes to.
Maybe it should just be the different universe.
The different universe, yeah. The other verse.
Yeah. Not quite the same universe.
Right.
It's not as catchy.
But that's what I was thinking of when I was watching that moment this time, was for you and me to talk about what DS9 did for the mirror universe. And I wonder, it's hard to say for sure, but the Next Generation never went to the mirror universe on screen. There's, of course, novels where they went to the mirror universe, but DS9 with Crossover was the first series to revisit the mirror universe after Mirror Mirror on the original series. And of course, Mirror Mirror, in part because of the time it was made and in part because of the story they wanted to tell, truly was a mirror, right? These are the good characters, and then over here, they're not. Now, Spock was maybe similar across both universes, right? You know, because that's how Kirk was able to convince Spock that maybe a change was needed. But you at least got, you know, the goatee on Spock, and his demeanor was a bit different. But really, Mirror Mirror presented that opposite if it's good here, it's bad there. And so fans carried that forward for a long time, which is interesting to me that it perpetuated for so long, given that there's only one episode of Star Trek like that before we get to crossover and DS9 starts to introduce Shades of Grey into the concept of the Mirror Universe.
Yeah, you know, I think if you're going to visit the Mirror Universe, you need to add something to it. And I think that's one of the things that we've talked at length about on many of our different shows. The fact that Deep Space Nine, if they are going to touch something in Star Trek, they are going to add to it. As you mentioned earlier, they did that with the Ferengi. They took us, and it's funny because they'll either take a TOS idea or a TNG idea, and they just go hog wild with it. You know, they really put their minds together. Okay, what could this be? And I think that's what made Deep Space Nine so enjoyable as a series, because it really was paying homage to everything that had come before by thinking out logically, okay, if we do this and we go here and we use this character, what does that mean, and why would it be like that? And I think that's just the thing that it really works, you know, that we come to the Mirror Universe and they've thought through, yes, it's fun and goofy and stuff like that, and it can be, but they have put a lot of thought into it, and you can tell that. And I think that's the thing that I was really interested in rewatching this episode, because I wasn't sure how I felt about it, but rewatching it, I really did feel like, okay, they legitimized coming back one last time because of what they do here in the episode.
What do you think TNG would have done with the Mirror Universe? And do you think it would have made a difference if they visited, say, in the first half of the series or the second half of the series? Would it have been more Mirror, Mirror, black and white? Or do you think they would have gone this sort of DS9 route?
Let me put it this way. If they had given the TNG Mirror episodes to somebody like Ron Moore, I think you would have gotten something similar to this. Because I think somebody like Ron Moore really had a respect for what they were doing in TOS and wanting to, I mean, I think a writer like him really wanted to connect more with the past. And so I think he would have come up with something similar to Deep Space Nine. I think the rest of the writers kind of were more in line with not doing that for the most part. They got the edict and they stuck to it, which is we're not going to reference history like that. So it makes it hard for me, other than somebody like him as a writer, actually doing a TNG style episode. It's hard for me to picture the cast doing it. I don't know. I think somebody like Jonathan Frakes would have gotten really into it.
I think so.
I think even a Brett Spiner could have gotten really into it. Marina Sirtis, I think, would have really been excited about it. But there's something about Patrick Stewart. I just have a hard time seeing him in the Mirror Universe. And maybe he would have enjoyed it. You know, maybe he would have just absolutely loved it because he just gets to play against type at that point and just sink his teeth into being a goofball or something. But yeah.
So you think Picard in the Mirror Universe would be a goofball because he's so serious? And
wouldn't that be great? I mean, just to see Patrick Stewart completely cut loose and be just like, kind of in the way that Sisko played his Ben Sisko in the alternate universe, where he was just kind of like, hey man, whatever happens, you know, just like he's just out there for a good time, you know, like that would be awesome. I don't need Picard to be evil. I just need for him to be just like totally chill and laid back and like getting all the ladies and, you know, yeah, that would be awesome.
Oh man. And he drinks coffee all the time, right?
That or he's just a stoner Picard.
Oh, it's funny. So I wasn't thinking this at all. I was picturing in my head more like the Picard of yesterday's Enterprise in the alternate timeline.
Oh, okay. So real serious and dark.
Like even more serious and dark. But I like your idea better. I'd like to see that Picard.
It would be, I mean, I can imagine Patrick Stewart having a great time playing that role. So.
And also, of course, in the alternate universe, Barclay, every week he does seminars for the crew about self-confidence and how to give better presentations during the staff meetings.
So I got a question for you, though.
Okay.
This is an episode here that they use to kind of continue the storyline that, you know, Bashir and Ezri are getting closer. But
yeah,
we have in the moment of this episode where Quark is disappointed because, you know, he never got to be with Jadzia, and he's open negotiations, as he calls it, with Ezri.
Yep.
You know, it's humorous, but I don't know. Did it work for you?
I don't know. I didn't think much of it other than I really want to know what Matthew thinks about Quark going after Ezri, because I thought Ezri was yours, Matthew.
Well, yeah, that's, I mean, I don't talk about my private life, but I...
No, I mean, I think that they probably did it because, as you said, Quark didn't get to be with Jadzia, who he was always interested in. And so here's Dax. It's still Dax, but it's Ezri. But more than that, I think it's that this is the season 7 visit to the Mirror Universe. Ezri joined the cast in season 7, so we have to get her involved somehow. How do we do that? Well, there is that connection that Quark was interested in Dax. So that works. And then we can have Ezri be the character who first comes over to get him. And it's a way of also, if you're going to build the story around Quark and the Ferengi, then you need something that can really cause Quark to lower his guard and actually be captured and taken over. And I think Ezri was the perfect choice for that.
Yeah, and I do too. I think... The idea of Quark kind of being with Ezri, you know, I always enjoyed the storyline that Bashir and Ezri found a romance. Honestly, in the books, I was always frustrated that they broke them up. I just, you know, that was one of the happy endings that happened in Deep Space Nine, because Deep Space Nine had a much more realistic and much more kind of melancholy end. And that was one of the moments where it was just like, that was... those characters got a happy ending, and then the books took that away from me. So, you know, seeing Quark, though, also be interested in Ezri, I think did make sense. You know, he always loved Dax, and they always had a very comfortable relationship and a very close relationship, one that, you know, obviously Worf never understood, and many people didn't understand, but Jadzia did, and that's all that mattered. We knew she had very strange interest in men, you know, transparent skulls, and she liked Morn's hair, chin hair and stuff. So, but what I loved about that is that she gave people a chance beyond what people saw on the outside. Mm-hmm. And so, I think, you know, Quark then having that interest in Ezri, who also treated Quark very well, made a lot of sense. And so just to see that play out, it's very interesting. And it does create that interesting thing. Like, what if you had a chance to be with somebody again, slightly differently, but it would, you know, there that whole thing with the Trill makes that very interesting. And so, I appreciate the story for what they do, but I mean, the way they were writing it, obviously poor Quark was going to get the shaft again. So,
right. Yeah. I mean, I would say that Quark is definitely not this Ezri's type.
No, in either universe, really. So,
but what's funny about that is that she is very close with Brunt in the Mirror Universe, which must drive Quark crazy.
Yeah. And that was something that I kind of liked too, is the whole Brunt thing and him being the one who's kind of pining for this Ezri, you know, and obviously being the really nice guy, which that was a fun switch. And then just having him back for the last big Ferengi episode and him getting to be there. I mean, you've got to have Jeffrey Combs.
But I like seeing what he might have been, like a really different person. Yeah.
Absolutely. So one more random thing that happens, aside from Quark and Ezri, Vic our favorite singer is an actual human in the Mirror Universe. That's interesting.
It is kind of funny, right? Because, I mean, if Vic were a hologram of a contemporary singer in the 24th century, then it would make perfect sense for him to be an actual human in the Mirror Universe. But the fact that he's a hologram of a singer from the 1960s on Earth, why is he a real human in the 24th century in the Mirror Universe, a step out of time with everyone else? But I think it shows how the DS9 writers are not afraid to have a little bit of fun. And does it make sense? No, but let's put James Darren in, let him have a little fun in the Mirror Universe, even if it's only for 1 or 2 minutes before he gets shot by Julian. And we get the great line of surprise from Cork and Rom that, I can't believe Julian just shot and killed Vic. And Rom says, you know, like, in our universe, that's his favorite singer, something along those lines. You know, it's like, I can't believe he killed his favorite singer. It was fun to see him pop up there, though.
It was so great because he's only there for a few seconds, really, and then he's dead.
And, so they don't have to explain anything. That's right. The key, right?
Exactly.
There's no explanation needed. It's just, what is he doing here? Oh, he's dead.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that's part of the fun in the Mirror Universe, too, is the fact that you get to kill people that you wouldn't normally get to kill, you know, and you get to play around with...
That sounds really bad, the way you said it.
It does, but, you know, as a writer of a
but
show...
But that's not what you mean. I know what you mean.
Kill your
like
main
in writing,
cast,
you can actually
right.
get rid of a character.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And so, yeah. And it was just... The Vic thing, it turns into a joke. He was his favorite singer, you know? And so, yeah. That's all there is to that. And I think... It is just kind of a fun moment where you really can be kind of crazy in the Mirror Universe and do these kind of things. And it shouldn't be a question of how does that work? It's the Mirror Universe. Who cares how it works? Just go with
it. Yeah, who cares, right? Yeah. Okay, well, one last big topic on our outline here. I want to come back to Ezri. And... I don't know. I see a lot of articles written about Star Trek. I see a lot of debate about, is Star Trek progressive? Is Star Trek not progressive? Is Discovery much more progressive than past series? And I think in reality, Star Trek has always been progressive in its time. And when you look back at Star Trek through the lenses of your 2019, 2018, 2017 glasses, discussions I've seen over the past few years... People tend to judge the writing based on where we are right now in society. And they forget that what they're seeing on screen at the time that it was filmed may have been a big deal. Of course, in the original series, you've got the first interracial kiss. In TNG, they addressed a lot of issues related to gender or to sexual assault at times when that was not necessarily discussed in the same way on a broad scale in society, and now it is, and I think Star Trek helped, you know, push discussion in that direction. And one thing that we see in this episode is the portrayal of lesbian and bisexual relationships involving Ezri and the Intendant and Leeta. And watching this episode today, it all seems absolutely perfectly normal because we would see this in pretty much any TV show, any drama, you know, aimed at an adult audience these days. But this was February of 1999 when this aired. And I remember, you know, in Alabama, this was just about four years after there was debate about whether Rejoined should be shown because of the same-sex kiss in that episode. And then the whole, you know, debate about the Ellen episode that actually I think did not get aired where I lived because of that. So here we are just, you know, 4 years after that, and DS9 is portraying this on screen. What does it mean in terms of DS9 and Star Trek as a vehicle for social commentary that they were doing this at that moment in time, almost 20 years ago now.
Yeah, you know, I just think it's another place where Deep Space Nine was on the edge of the final frontier. And really, they were in touch with what it meant to be Star Trek in all of these places. And so, you know, to have Ezri and the Intendant and Leeta, you know, I think one of the smart things that they do here is that they have the Intendant, who is not a good character, you know, in the sense of that she is morally bankrupt and not a person that you would look to, but that they add Ezri and Leeta here to be characters that you could look to as, you know, more morally not so ambiguous. And obviously, Leeta is a character who's, you know, with the good guys. And so giving you that balance, so we're not saying that to be these things is wrong or bad or anything like that, or that we're putting those characters down in any way, because, you know, the Intendant as your representative is not a good representative. So I think they do a really good job here with that. And, you know, again, I think it shows how Deep Space Nine was just ahead of the curve for all Star Trek in this way, because this is definitely, you don't really see this in Voyager. And, you know, Enterprise does some of this. You know, we talked, you know, Cogenitor being a big episode with that kind of conversation. But it's not a huge conversation for them either, really, for the most part. So, you know, and it wasn't a huge conversation for Deep Space Nine, but the fact that they had this here, like you said, in 1999, you need to give them their due. And it's disappointing to see people not do that, forgetting all that Deep Space Nine has given us, whether it's being the first Star Trek show to really dive into what it meant to be religious in this society and what religion meant in the 24th century. I mean, the roots of that all come from Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And, you know, I think it's something that Ira and the writers, they were very proud of what they did. And I think they're also proud of the ways that they were able to, you know, show these type of characters. So, and I think they should be, especially since it was kind of pushing the boundary a little bit at that time period. And so well done to them.
Yeah, I think it was pushing the boundary a bit at that time, even though it's not a big discussion here. They don't make a big deal out of it. It's just sort of a passing mention. It's almost like the Sulu in the JJ films when he meets his partner when they arrive. You know, they don't make a big deal. A big deal was made about it in all the discussions surrounding the lead up to the movie. And then when you get to the movie, it was a very well done, very simple scene. They just touched on it. They hinted at it. I mean, they let you know that Sulu had a same-sex partner, but there was no big deal made about it. And I think it's similar here, where they're touching on this. They're telling people, like, this is a real thing. This is part of real life. These are real people, and they have feelings that may be different from yours, but that's fine. And then we move on with the story. And, you know, today it might be explored more deeply, but at this time, just the mere fact that DS9 made this part of the story, I think, is an example of how DS9 gently pushes people's views forward and pushes society forward, and does it in an environment where other TV shows may shy away from doing the same thing at that time. And I think that that's maybe less the case these days because more shows are willing to do it. But historically, Star Trek was definitely there, and they were trying to push things forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, we are at the end of the Mirror Universe. So do you have any final thoughts on this episode or DS9's Mirror Universe excursions in general?
You know, I find this really fun. And actually, the way the universe ends here through the Looking Glass, I just really appreciate that they put thought into the fact that, yes, we should wrap this story up. And they gave us kind of a happy ending for the Mirror Universe and those characters for this, you know, this rebellion that's been fighting against this alliance for so long. They finally have their win. And it puts that to rest in a way that was fun and enjoyable to watch, especially in, like I said, a season that is so emotionally charged. This was a very good way to do that, I think. And so, you know, I think all in all, I would call the Mirror Universe episodes mostly a success for Deep Space Nine, and they had done well with their choice of going to the Mirror Universe and actually utilizing this. And when I think of the most worthwhile additions to the Mirror Universe story-wise, I don't have any problem with the Enterprise episodes, but I think what Deep Space Nine does actually stands as something that truly added to the Mirror Universe in a way that we hadn't had that before. And so it's more than just fun going to it. It actually really adds to it. So that's great.
Yeah, my final thoughts are, I mean, pretty much the same as yours. So I won't go into those again. But I think they did a good job with the story. And I'm glad that there was a series that actually revisited the Mirror Universe on a regular basis so that we could flesh out that part of the Star Trek universe, Star Trek franchise. As for which is my favorite, there are parts of each episode that I really like. As a single episode, I tend to always go back to Crossover. I think probably because it was the first visit and it was unexpected. You know, we didn't see it coming. We didn't have social media back in those days. So, and I don't remember, like in Star Trek magazine, if there was a lot of talk about, hey, you know, we're going to have this Mirror Universe episode coming up. I remember that for me, it was pretty much a surprise that, hey, oh, wow, we're in the Mirror Universe. And then when Kira drops Kirk's name, I thought, wow, that's really cool. And so maybe for that reason, I have sort of a nostalgic memory of that episode. But yeah, I love what DS9 did with the Mirror Universe. And I'm glad we have those episodes. And one last question for you, Matthew. Do you recommend that people watch this Mirror Universe arc in DS9 as like a standalone where they just go through every Mirror Universe arc? Do you think that helps to take in the storyline, or do you feel like the storyline is a bit too scattered for that?
Actually, no, I do agree with you. You can actually do this. You know, I think you can just watch those episodes and it actually works really well. You know, we kind of have done that, and obviously it's been over a longer period of time than we would have thought it would have been. But just thinking through, no, I think it actually works. You can watch each one of these episodes, just go through the seasons, and it creates a really fun arc for the Mirror Universe, as well as some of our characters on Deep Space Nine.
Excellent. Well, Matthew, it has been great talking about the Emperor's New Cloak and the Mirror Universe in general with you, but it's not the only thing we've been discussing here on the network. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room.
I just wonder, like, I think this is sort of a delicate focus area for a series, Section 31. I think it will be very easy to make an interesting TV show that strays too far away from what Star Trek is at its core, unless it's handled carefully. And so I'm going to be interested to see what they do with it. And I'm kind of wait and see.
That can be a dynamic tension. You could have two different characters or two different factions that represent that spectrum.
Earl Grey.
But yeah, it is kind of a very Kirk thing. Like, I'm going to, you know, save the day this way. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. It's a great moment because the twist, you just don't see it at all. And here Riker comes and is like, nope, I'm not. And then bam, bing, bing, and poo, poo.
Yeah, I think the first time I saw it, I was like, oh no, if Riker's infected, how are they going to get up? Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, right. And just right to the very end. It was great timing on that. Yeah.
The orb.
The way that you live your life is a routine and a pattern and almost an addiction because it becomes just what you do. And to break out of that takes immense work. And therefore, you usually, when you're going to make a change like that, you need some sort of safety net. And Braille hasn't been in a place where he feels that long enough, even though Kira is kind of offering that to him.
The Edge. A Star Trek Discovery podcast.
Pike's answer was a little, well, I owe you a simile. Like, oh, come on, dude. But when he talks to Connelly, he's like, do you see how many syllables died? Like, that was great.
That was so funny. Oh my gosh, that was so amazing.
I guess I'm being a bit contradictory here because I like Pike for the reasons I don't like Tilly, right? But...
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us everywhere you get your podcasts. Of course, if you're an Apple user, you'll find us in Apple Podcasts and also in the iTunes app on the desktop. Be sure to hit the subscribe button. That way you'll get each episode as it comes out. And if you have a moment, we'd love for you to leave us a star rating and a written review. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You'll find us in Google Podcasts, on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud. We're pretty much everywhere. All the third-party apps as well. You're going to find us. Just search for The Orb for this show. Search for Trek.fm for all of our shows. And be sure to pick up the master feed. That contains every episode of everything that we do. And it's a great way to sample the wide range of topics and discussions that we have here on the network. Of course, we'd love to hear your thoughts on the Emperor's New Cloak. So if you would like to send Matthew and me a message, you can do that using our website. Go to trek.fm/contact. Use the form there, choose to send to a show, and choose The Orb, and that'll come to both of us by email. You can also find us on Twitter. Our username is trekfm, and our main page on Facebook is facebook.com/trekfm. The best place to join into the bigger discussion with hosts and fellow listeners is the Babel Conference. That's our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, and it should come right up. If it doesn't, just type the whole name, the Babel Conference. It is a closed group, so if you're new to the group, you'll need to click join, answer two questions, and then a moderator will let you in. Now, Matthew, when you're not busy opening negotiations with Esri, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me here on the network doing the 602 Club with Christy Morris as we talk about all the fandoms we love that don't have anything to do with Star Trek, because there are so many great fandoms out there for us to talk about. So I hope you will join us over there. You can find me on the Nerd Party Network talking about a couple of different things. One of them is Owl Post with Drea Kaufman as we talk about one chapter of Harry Potter at a time. We are in the Order of the Phoenix, so make sure you check that out. It's a lot of fun. Doing Gress Negotiations with John Mills, talking about Star Wars each and every week, which is just an absolute joy. And then last but not least, talking about films through the lens of faith with my good friend Courtney over on Cinema Stories. I'm exhausted after all that, Chris. Where can people find you?
You know, I was just thinking, because we're talking about Mirror Universe and alternate, you are me from about 7 years ago when I used to do so many podcasts. I was doing 7 different podcasts every week. And when I hear you give the rundown of your shows, I'm thinking, you're like Mirror Me, and we're a little bit out of sync time-wise, but... Now, these days, I don't get to podcast as much as I used to or as much as I would like because of my workload. It's something that I'm hoping to change this year. But, you know, we do have things in real life that sometimes keep us away from the mic. But you can hear me sometimes on my main show, The Ready Room, which these days is Larry Nemechek and me chatting about Star Trek. And if you go into the back catalog, most of that show is a panel discussion about news and one episode, and we rotate through all the series. You can also find me doing Notes from the Edge, which I do after each episode of Star Trek Discovery. For season one, I did them right after each episode. For season two, they are delayed a bit, again, because of my work schedule, but I am working on them right now and will release them sometime in the near future. That's a show where I share my thoughts on the current episode of Discovery, and also connect the dots between Discovery and the greater Star Trek universe, because there are all kinds of connections that a lot of people don't pick up on. I dig in not only to the television versions of Star Trek, but also the literary universe on that show. And you can find my writing on the official website at StarTrek.com. And if you want to communicate with me, really the best place is Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. I am making my way through my DS9 rewatch. I'm about halfway through or towards the latter half of season 6 right now. It gets disrupted often because of work, but when I can, I'm watching, and I usually tweet things out as I'm watching. So if you'd like to follow along with that, I'd love to chat with you there. If you send me a message on Twitter, I will reply. I do like to chat there. So that's probably the best place. But you'll also find me in the Babel Conference from time to time. All right, Matthew, I would like to thank our associate producers here on The Orb, because these are the people that help us pay the bills so that we can create this show, produce it, host it, and push it out to everyone's devices. So thank you to Norman C. Lau, William Murray, Kay Elizabeth Shaw, and James Muldrow. We really appreciate your support. And if you would like to become an associate producer of The Orb, or just a supporter of the network in general, you can do that at Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. We have perks such as the Patrons Roundtable, where you can get on mic just like we do here on the show with some of our hosts and other producers and chat about Star Trek, and we push that out there for everyone to listen to in the master feed. We also have our special website, Patron Zone, and other perks for you. Please go check it out, find out all about it, and we appreciate any support that you can give us, because it does take quite a lot to run the network. Again, that's at patreon.com/trekfm. Well, Matthew, I'm glad that we're back in our own universe now, so we can look for some new DS9 topics to cover here on The Orb, and I'm looking forward to chatting with you about those in the near future.
Well, Chris, I am glad to be back as well. We want to say thank you to everyone for joining us, and we will see you next time as we gaze into the Orb.